Welcome back to The Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. The retrial of Bill Cosby. Here to talk about it is a former prosecutor and good friend of the show. From Proof with Jill Stanley, we say hello to Jill Stanley and some inside baseball first. We are recording this midweek. It is Wednesday where we are. It's The Weekend where you are. So we're talking about this right after closing arguments. Jill, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ed.
The retrial of Bill Cosby. Briefly remind us how we got here in the first place.
Well, as some of you may recall, last June, Bill Cosby was charged and tried for the aggravated sexual assault against Andrew Constant, three counts of it. And the jury, that jury, was not able to come to a decision. Basically, a mistrial was declared. So when a mistrial is declared, there's two choices. A, the prosecution says, we're kind of done. We're not going to waste any more taxpayer money on this case, and you're free to go. Or B, I don't think so. We're going to try you again, and we're going to get you next time. And that's exactly what happens here. DA Kevin Steele, very solidly, right after this mistrial, came right out and said, we're going to see you again in court, Mr. Cosby. You're not getting away with this. And here we are. We find ourselves not quite a year later. What is it? 10 months later?
Just about, yeah.
With a full-blown trial again.
Now, Andrea Constant was very strong on the stand the first time. Was she as strong this time around?
So this is interesting. I was at the trial last time. I was there from start to finish. And she blew me away. And some of your listeners, if they remember our conversation last year, might remember that I was blown away. As someone who has seen tons of witnesses on the stand, I can tell you that Andrea Constant and her mother, even more so, were amazing witnesses round one. I was not there this year, but I can tell you that people who were there said she was equally strong this year.
Now, you've worked as a prosecutor, so you have firsthand knowledge as to how this should be done. If you had to critique the way this was handled the first time, what was done wrong, if anything, the first time?
You know what? I don't think anything was really done wrong. The prosecution was amazing last time around. They were prepared. They were strong. They were clear. The defense was prepared, strong, and clear. I know everyone wanted to talk about the defense being somewhat weak, but let's not forget, they did not lose, so to speak. This man walked for at least another year or 10 months. And so they did, you know, they definitely got the ball a little bit down the court. So it was not a loss for them. However, the issue remains the same this time around, the inconsistencies in the story. Now, there are inconsistencies in every case. And, you know, you might recall a conversation you had with your wife yesterday. She recalls it one way, you recall it the other way.
Right.
And where is the truth? And so that's exactly what goes on in a trial. So that is what the defense did last time, pick out little inconsistencies or also try to make this seem like it was a consensual relationship. That's exactly what they did this year. So, again, tried to make it seem consensual, picked all these inconsistencies out with timing and phone calls and travel just to kind of cast doubt. And that is all they need to do. Because, as many of us know, the standard of proof in a criminal case is beyond a reasonable doubt. So if the jury can sit there and say, hey, you know, I kind of think he did it, but I'm really not that sure because there's this and there's that and there's that phone call and that date wasn't right. That's it. That's all you need to have an acquittal of Bill Cosby. It's a very hard standard for the prosecution. And that is what is good about our system. It really is. But it's also what hurts in cases like this where there's a lot of time delay between the incident and the trial because we know it's been a very long time. And it just makes things more complicated. The other complicating factor with actually, there's two of them. That's kind of the big buzz things that are different about the 2017 versus the 2018 Bill Cosby trial. And that is that the prosecution was allowed to have five witnesses testify to, hey, that man drugged me, then he raped me. Five people with the same story as Andrea Constant. Last time, we only had one. And I will tell you, that witness was amazing. I was actually surprised they didn't call her again. But the five women that they did choose were very strong. Did some of them have some spotty things in their past? Of course. We all have a few spotty things in our past. And so, I mean, no one's walking around like the Virgin Mary here. So,
but there is a power in numbers, especially in a situation like this.
I would have liked to have seen more than five. I understand.
Yeah.
Right. Judge O'Neill only allowed five, and I'll tell you why that is. Because really, he's not being tried for what he did to five other women. The five women are used to show a plan, kind of a common scheme, not to show that he did it to these other women. And so that's why you can't have too many more witnesses going on the stand. I would have liked 7 to 9. I think that would have really brought it home.
Sure.
But five, solid. And the other bit of information that came out in this trial that was not allowed in the first trial was the amount of the civil settlement Andrea Constant had with Bill Cosby.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big one. So she did make over $3 million from Bill Cosby for this act. But if you hear what happened and you believe Andrea's story, she deserved that money.
Right. It still doesn't change the facts of the case.
Exactly.
Right. You know what else has really interested me from the first to the second is what has gone on really in this country between that time. The advent of the Me Too movement. The awareness of us in terms of the media coverage of the Me Too movement, of just the awareness of how people now feel, even just now compared to a year ago. How much do you think that change has affected the second trial in terms of the jury pool that was out there and watched everything and heard all of this and saw all of these stories and all of these different women that came forward in all these different venues? How did that affect the second trial?
So, you know, this is a concept that I've been thinking about a great deal since October, when kind of Me Too exploded with Harvey Weinstein.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I actually really have not totally figured out how I feel about it in terms of how it affects the Cosby trial. Certainly the jurors know about it. Certainly now we don't think, oh, these Hollywood men, they are who they look like on television. No, Kevin Spacey really is a good guy. No, Bill Cosby really is Dr. Huxtable. That is gone. So I think we now believe, hey, he could have done this. But the jury is not supposed to consider information that is outside of this courtroom. And a good jury doesn't. And so do I think it will affect the decision? You know, it definitely was part of the case. It was hovering. It did not help the defense in any way. It certainly helped the prosecution. And if you saw how this closing went, what Kathleen Bliff mm-hmm. did to these five victims was honestly, as one journalist said, despicable. I completely agree. For another woman, especially, to go into a courtroom and just sit there and victim blame, there were different ways to defend Cosby.
Mm-hmm.
She did not need to do that. That was good for her if she can sleep at night. Because in this era in which we live, in this hashtag Me Too, in this Time's Up movement, to go into a courtroom and to say that about these five victims who were brave enough to get on the stand and tell their story, for no money, by the way, and for no chance of a future lawsuit, that their cases will never be tried. Bill Cosby will never face a jury for what he allegedly did to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they came on that stand to be heard and to, in some way, have their day in court. And their testimony was so emotional, and they all looked him in the eye. So there is justice there. I feel good about that. But Me Too is hovering around this whole case, and to be frank, I'm nervous about it.
Yeah.
I am.
You've just mentioned it. A jury is supposed to put everything aside and just concentrate on the facts of the case, not think about the world around us. But now, you, as a prosecutor, did you ever worry about how the subconscious can affect the conscious in any juror? I mean, they're human beings. I know they're supposed to set it aside, and any good jury will, but it only takes one juror who doesn't. And how did that...
Oh, of course.
That's got to be so problematic and worrisome to any prosecutor, because you try to keep the outside world out as much as you can, but when it's so pervasive, such as what Me Too has become in terms of how overwhelming it has become in the media and how much we've heard of it, it is so hard for the average human being to separate that, I would imagine.
Well, Me Too in this situation is helpful to the prosecution.
Mm.
But in any trial, whether it's civil or criminal, your jurors come with their life experiences. So they come with their biases. And think about kind of your friends, people you know. Aren't there some of them you like just don't get?
Right.
And they'll say things and you don't get how
exactly.
they can say that.
Mm-hmm.
They're jurors. So we don't know what's in the mind of the juror. We don't know what has happened in their life unless it came out during jury selection. And
mm-hmm.
those people are kind of quickly removed from the panel. But we really don't know the biases that people come to a jury panel with. and what will affect their decision-making process. So that's in any case. This one is different. You're right, Ed, because Me Too is so big. So there can't be a juror sitting in that box. None of those 12 not know about Me Too. Do not know what has gone in Hollywood, and do not know that now is a kind of a day of reckoning.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a good thing for the prosecution, and I don't think it's tarnishing the process. I hope that it's really in their minds, not that, oh, Harvey Weinstein did it, oh, Kevin Spacey did it, but you know what? Hey, who we see on that screen, who we read about in the magazines, is not necessarily the person who's being charged with this crime. And we now can maybe see Dr. Huxtable doing this, as opposed to, oh, my God, no way. No way,
right.
Dr. Huxtable.
Right.
And so that, I think, is the positive part. I am worried that if this jury does not return a verdict convicting Bill Cosby of at least one of the three counts, that there will be a slight ding to the movement. But in no way do I think it decimates it. In no way do I think it buries it. The timing is very interesting. It's a real fairly exciting time, actually.
Yeah, it's very exciting, and it's a very important case, and we await to see. And as we mentioned, we recorded this on Wednesday of this week, so we have a certain perspective that we're kind of restricted by at this point, but we're going to make sure that we have Jill back on after the verdict comes in, and we'll talk about the effects and where we're going to go from here. Well, as always, Proof with Jill Stanley is the place to be when jurisprudence crisscrosses with celebrity and entertainment, all over social media and at proofwithjillstanley.com. Jill Stanley, as always, thanks for joining us here on The Weekend.
Thanks, Ed.
Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is The Weekend.